Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, December 6th, 2008. This is show 515. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk high tech, and I want you to join me, and we'll have some fun today talking about all those cool gadgets and gizmos, computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, high-def televisions, all of that. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number if you want to call in and ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. That's 888-827-5536, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., and we could talk about MP3 players, as I said, the iPod, we could talk about Windows, we could talk about Mac, we could talk about Linux. There's, as always, there's a huge amount to talk about in the world of technology, so give me a ring, and it doesn't have to be, by the way, a question, it could be a comment, it could be a suggestion, it could be, if you went shopping, you bought something on Black Friday or Cyber Monday, and you're trying to figure out what the heck do I do with it now, we'll do that too. 8888-ASK-LEO. Did you see, it's kind of silly. Did you see the whole froufarah about President-elect Obama's Zune? It actually crashed a website. There's a Philadelphia online newspaper, citypaper.net. And it was like the fourth paragraph of a story about, Obama working out in the gym. And the reporter noticed he pulled out an MP3 player. And, lo and behold, it wasn't an iPod. It was a Microsoft Zune, which is remarkable, partly because you hardly ever see any, Zunes in the wild. But a blogger picked it up, and it actually brought citypaper.net down for a while. There were so many hits on the page. It was so much conversation. I guess, you know, when there's so many heavy-duty, serious things to be talking about, something light and interesting like, does President-elect Obama actually use a Zune? Kind of can occupy our minds in ways that are sometimes a little surprising. Well, it turns out, all right, so the campaign, or I guess it's not the campaign anymore, the office of the president-elect had to put out a press release saying, no, President-elect Obama does not use a Zune. He, in fact, uses an iPod. But some detective work, it turns out that might have been a Zune because Microsoft had special Zunes made for the Democratic convention. And so the sleuths, the internet blogging sleuths, decided that he must have forgotten, forgotten his iPod and asked an aide, of course he's surrounded at all times by many aides, asked an aide, give me your Zune. I want to borrow your Zune. That would explain it. Sure it would. That would explain it. Let's see what else is going on. Speaking of Apple, 300 million App Store downloads. 300 million App Store downloads on the iTunes iPhone App Store. I guess I should say what App Store? The iPhone application store on iTunes. The Apple took out large ads. Did you see that in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal? More than 10,000 applications in the store. Across that very kind of big milestone. 10,000 different applications. It's kind of amazing. And of the 10,000 applications, they've sold 300 million. It's really remarkable. If you look at Apple's most downloaded list, it's pretty much games, entertainment. Google Earth, well, that's a cool app. Have you played with that? Seventh most downloaded free iPhone application. Tap Tap Revenge. That's a fun game. It's like kind of like Guitar Hero for the iPhone. Pretty big success. It's real. Apple just keeps on rolling along with this. And you have to figure Microsoft, I'm sure they were all excited. Oh, President-elect Obama carries a Zune. No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He borrowed a Zune. It was temporarily. Just a temporary Zune. I think the most interesting application, and one that is going to be controversial, I think, that is out now for the iPhone. By the way, I finally got a BlackBerry Storm. We'll talk about that as well. Verizon sent me a Storm, so I can give you a little review of that a little later on. Short thumbnail sketch. Very cool. Very nice. Very pretty. I'm sticking with the iPhone. Sorry. I'm a BlackBerry fan. I love the curve. And I think the Bold is probably the one to get, but I'm sticking with the phone, the iPhone. But a very interesting application out from Amazon that I think is going to be very controversial. It's the official Amazon mobile iPhone application. And the deal is on this. You can go online and you could shop Amazon.com and you can, it's kind of got an interface to Amazon.com. You can browse through Amazon's stuff. But here's the thing that's kind of, they say it's experimental, which means if we get too many complaints about this, we're going to take it out. You press the button that says, remember. All right. And then you could take a picture of something you're, interested in buying. So you take a picture of it. Yeah, big deal, right? It's just so that you remember it, right? Well, it gets uploaded to the Amazon site. And then humans somewhere, probably using the Amazon's Mechanical Turk, and they have this kind of interesting system where you can inexpensively, for just a few pennies, use humans to do things like recognize text or recognize pictures. And I think that's probably what they're doing. So a human somewhere... The picture that you've memorized will be stored on your phone, stored on your Amazon account, but then a human somewhere, and this is going to be the controversial thing, will find that item on Amazon and put a link to it on your phone and on your Amazon page. Why is that controversial? Well, let's say I go to Best Buy and I look at a camera and I say, I like that. Let's see, best price, $298. I take a picture of it. Within a couple of minutes, and it did happen very, very quickly, within a couple of minutes, my phone says, you can get that from Amazon for $270. Press here. That's got to kill Best Buy. That's got to drive them crazy. I tried it with a couple of different items. I went to the bookstore, took a picture of my friend Andy Inako's book, iPhone Fully Loaded. That's appropriate. Took a picture with that in the iPhone. I did it surreptitiously. I felt guilty. I'm in an independent bookstore. That's probably the people who will get hurt most by this, right? I felt really guilty, but I took the picture. And within a couple of minutes, yeah, they found it. Now, right in the front, it says iPhone Fully Loaded. So that was kind of the easy test. Within 2 minutes, it gave me a link to, buying it on Amazon for $13.59. I could have it overnighted to me. So I tried something a little more difficult. In the same bookstore, I took a picture of a Clint Eastwood photo book that just has a big picture of Clint on it, no text. I thought, well, this will be a little bit harder. How are they, it's easy to look at the title of the book and order it, but how are they going to figure out what that is? And in fact, they did give me the wrong book. They gave me a Clint Eastwood picture book, but not that one. So somebody in India or somewhere recognized Clint, searched Amazon, found Clint Eastwood, A Life in Pictures, and said, that must be it. And gave me a link to that. But it's not the same book that I took the picture of. So it's imperfect. And yet, man, you got to figure bookstores. How long before you see a sign in the door of the bookstore, no photos allowed? It's already happening in some places when you reach to take out your phone and start to take a picture, they'll stop you. The Google phone has a similar barcode scanning application that is in the same way. In fact, maybe it's even more effective. You scan a barcode. So you take out your Google phone, the G1 from T-Mobile. You take it out. You point it at a barcode. You press a button. It goes beep. Within 10 seconds, it says, I found this item for these prices. Here's the nearest place you could buy it for less. I could just feel retailers cringing all over the place. And bookstores, this has got to be terrible for brick and mortar. We call them brick and mortar, you know, the stores that are actual real life, or as World of Warcraft people call it, RL. The RL stores have to be cringing because you go into an RL brick and mortar actual bookstore. You look around, you say, oh, I like that book, snap it. I like that book, snap it. I like that book, snap it. And then you go home and order it on Amazon for less. What do you think? It's approved by Apple. It's in the store. You can get it now. It's absolutely free. I admit it. I use Amazon all the time. And as a regular Amazon user, this thing's amazing. It has one click and everything. So how do you save stores like bookstores? Where it's, you know, the other day I went to a bookstore. I was looking for a book, a Paul Krugman book. And I really wanted to buy a copy. I was going to a dinner party. I wanted to buy two copies for my host and a friend who were going to be at the dinner party. I knew they would have liked this book. So I went to the bookstore, looked for it. And already I'm getting a little frustrated because I'm an internet kid, right? And what do you mean look for it? Can't I just type a search term? So I'm looking in the shelves. I can't find it. It's alphabetical, right? Yeah. By author? Yeah, okay. Can't find it. So I go to the front desk. I say, do you have this Paul Krugman book, Conscience of a Liberal? It takes her literally 3 minutes to find it in the database and tell me, no, we don't. We could order it for you. It'll be here next week. At the end of that moment, you know, it took me about 20 minutes to find out they didn't have it. In 30 seconds, I can order it on Amazon.com and have it overnighted to me. Now, admittedly, I want to support independent bookstores. I think they're great things, but they're going to have to go a step farther to improve their experience, or people are just going to stop going there. They're going to start using applications like this. They're going to buy online, right? Or not. I love browsing a bookstore, but it's got to be a great place. It's got to be cozy. It's got to be service-oriented. It's got to be friendly. You got to want to be there, right? Hey, let's talk about it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. Your time to get online. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO if you want to talk high tech. I'd love to talk high tech with you. Let's go to Kim in Laguna Beach, California, our first caller of the day. Hi, Kim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great today.
What can
cold,
I do for you?
Other than that, I'm fine.
Cold in Laguna Beach? What are you talking about? It's like 60 degrees. That's freezing, isn't it? Oh, you have a cold. Okay.
I have a cold,
well,
yeah.
I hope
no,
you
it's
feel...
not cold here.
We have people who are listening in sub-zero weather, and I have to admit, as a Californian myself, if it goes down below 60, it's like, oh, turn the heat on. I can't take it. So I hope you feel better, Kim. What can I do for you?
Well, thank you. Well, this week, after hearing you talk about how important it is to back up week in and week out, I actually went out and bought a little LaCie hard drive. I got the 250 gigabyte one just to get started, and I also over the summer upgraded my iMac to Leopard.
So, great. You've had a big weekend.
Yeah, I have. And then I plugged the hard drive in, and of course it Time Machine recognized my hard drive, and it asked me if I wanted to back up, and I said yes, and that's all fine. It took several hours, but it got finished. But my question for you is, I actually have another Mac. It's a laptop, and I'm running Tiger on it, and I wanted to also back up my photos from that Mac. And I don't know what's going to happen when I plug it into that Mac that doesn't have Time Machine on it.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons I don't actually like Time Machine. Time Machine does take over that hard drive. So you now, it's associated with the first Mac. If you want to use that LaCie for something else, you have two choices. You could partition it. Apple has a disk utility. It's in the utilities folder, and you'd have to start over, but a big deal, right? It's easy to do. So you open the disk utility, you open the LaCie, and you say to it, I want to divide you into two drives, two virtual drives. And then when next time you plug it in, you'll see two drives mounting on your desktop, drive one and drive two, thing A, thing B, whatever you want to call them. And then okay. you tell when time, and then when you plug it in, Time Machine says, I see thing A and thing B. Which one would you like me to use for Time Machine? You could say thing A, and then I'll still leave you room on that drive to, you even use Time Machine if you want on the second Mac. Time Machine is great for people who don't want to think about backup, don't want to know about backup, don't want to have anything to do with backup, but it's so limited. Things like taking over a hard drive to me are kind of unfriendly. So it's kind of limited in that respect. And so other, you don't have that problem with other backup utilities like SuperDuper or ChronoSync. But if you like Time Machine, go ahead and use it. That's the solution, is to partition that external drive.
So then when I have the second partition, I can use it on my other Mac.
Right. It'll look like two drives.
But that one has Tiger, so it's not running Time Machine. So then do I just drop and drag my photo file?
Yeah. I mean, in many ways, I think dragging and dropping is the best way to do it. iPhoto has a backup, command. You can, share your photos with that drive. But I think copying is actually a good way to do it. And there's two ways to do it. If you have the latest iLife, you'll see the whole iPhoto library is just one file. So I guess you back up that whole file. That's fine. But if you want to save some space, you can only back up the original photos if you open that one file. If you show package contents and open that one file, then you can get just the original photos. Do you know how to show package contents on a Macintosh?
I don't think so.
Do you even know what I'm talking about? Apple, actually everybody does it now. Windows does this too. Has a kind of, to hide complexity, they can make a folder look like a file.
Uh-huh.
So if you look at your iPhoto folder, or rather iPhoto library file, it looks like a single file. On my disk, it's a 6 gigabyte file. It's not. It's a folder. So you press Control and click on it, and you'll see in the pop-up menu, Show Package Contents. And inside the package contents are, it's a folder. Applications are like this too. Oh, look, there's other stuff in here. And the thing you want is the originals folder inside of there. That's just the originals that you copied off the camera without any modifications you made in iPhoto, etc.
Okay.
So if you want to save space, so I said my iPhoto library was 6 gigabytes. If I look at the size of just the originals, it's less than that. It's about half that. So if you want to, it's 5 gigabytes, so it's a gigabyte less. So if you just want to back up the originals and not any changes you made in iPhoto, like rotations or a red eye removal, that kind of thing, you could just open, right click or control click the iPhoto library, open, show package contents, and then back up just the originals. But you know what? I made it a little too complicated, Kim, for you.
No, just I think I got it. I'm actually taking notes.
Oh, you're looking at it. Okay. I mean, I'm being really geeky here. That's silly. You just copy the iPhoto library. Or get a program. It's free, called SuperDuper, which I love.
Okay.
If you Google SuperDuper, you'll find it right away. You can pay for it and get a few extra features you don't need to. It's from Shirt Pocket Software. The free version will do the backup for you. And you tell it, I want this folder to be backed up to this drive whenever it's connected, or once a day, or whenever I say so, and it'll do it automatically. SuperDuper is a great program.
If I could, should I just reformat my hard drive or partition it, like you said, and then do the SuperDuper?
Yeah. Or you can hand drag. Exactly.
Okay.
You can hand drag. Yeah.
No, that helps.
I hope you. Good, Kim. I hope you feel better.
Well, thank you so much. I'll listen to the rest of your show today. Have a great day.
Well, that's a fair deal. I help you. You listen to me. That seems okay with me. I'll take it. Coming up in just a little bit, my good friend Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy from Ultimate AV Magazine, our home theater segment. More of your calls, too, at 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Back it up safe, sound, and online. If you're not backing up off-site, you're not backing up. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the coupon code LEO for a special deal. No credit card needed. C-A-R-B-O-N-I-T-E. Carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We're talking high tech. And as always, this time of the show, we like to get our friend Scott Wilkinson on the line. Scott is the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine at ultimateavmag.com. On the phone with us right now from beautiful Southern California. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
We were trying to get Skype working. I don't know what happened, but I'm glad I could get you on anyway.
I am, too. Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. It's black magic, as usual.
That's the magic of the phone, isn't it? It always works.
It always works.
People,
I know.
I think when the, not to get too off subject, but what the heck, that's my job.
Yeah, really.
When the phone system was originally established, that was really a high priority. It was reliability.
Mm.
And in fact, that's why for years you couldn't put your own equipment on there. You know, Western Electric phones were required. They said, well, we don't know what you're going to do to the network.
Right. I remember those days when you couldn't buy a phone.
That's right. You had to rent them.
Yep.
And it was a monopoly, but it was a monopoly because it was such an important monopoly that they were allowed that kind of control.
And it's so reliable. I mean, I always have a landline now, you know.
Isn't it amazing? Okay. Yeah. And we really realize that now as we start to use voice over internet.
Right.
How spoiled we are with the phone system.
Indeed.
Hey, it sounds terrible, but it always works. So,
yep.
Scott, let's talk about big screens, home theater, surround sound. What's up?
Well, actually, I wanted to talk about a really big screen today. And in fact, commercial cinema, which is not our normal area, but I went to a really interesting event yesterday that I thought you would be interested in. You know, there's this new movie coming out, the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, yes, that's Remy. What's his name?
Michael Remy. Was the
Barada Nikto.
Klaatu Barada Nikto, yes.
Am I a geek or what? Okay, we should do a contest sometime. If somebody could tell us what happens when you say Klaatu Barada Nikto, then you're an old-timer like me and Scott.
Exactly.
That's great. Who's I didn't know they were remaking it. That's one of my favorite films.
And in fact, for the home theater crowd, the original just came out on Blu-ray.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I just got it.
Is it worth getting old movies on Blu-ray, or is it just kind of...
It depends on how they restore them. You know, they could, if they restore them well and master them well from the original film prints, which, you know, may in fact be degrading, so it's more difficult to do on older movies. But if they can do that, then absolutely. I mean, Casablanca is a perfect example of a really old movie that actually looks really good on Blu-ray. And so I'm very interested to see the Day the Earth Stood Still.
Is a movie as old as Casablanca, which was made in the 40s, is that, I mean, if you're looking at film, is that high def?
Well, all film is high def.
It is. It's the resolution of the film.
Correct.
Is as high as a high def movie.
Correct. More so even. I've heard various numbers bandied about, you know, what is the actual ultimate resolution of film. But it is, in fact, higher than high def.
Okay.
So
even an old flick like The Day the Earth Stood Still or Casablanca would look great.
Yeah.
If it's well done.
Exactly. And how much care the studio takes and how much money they spend ultimately, you know, in restoring that movie and then mastering it, which is another process that could go horribly wrong or not. You know, you'll end up with a good looking picture or not. So, but of course, that's one of the classic sci-fi movies, right, of all time. And
a great one
it is.
Yeah.
So they're just next week will be the premiere of the remake, the new version, which stars Keanu Reeves.
Oh, I'm sorry.
As Klaatu.
Klaatu Barada Nikto. Whoa. Dude.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Dude. Klaatu. Oh. I'm
now,
sorry.
You're thinking of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and you know, that's where he made his start and
he was good in Matrix, but there is a Bill and Ted moment in Matrix where he runs to the edge of the roof. Remember, he's learning how to jump off buildings.
Oh, right.
He runs to the edge of the roof, looks down, goes, whoa.
And
at that moment, I'm sorry, I had to think Bill and Ted. I just couldn't
help it.
So, all right. Anyway, let's talk about the screen. Well, was this a Runco? Was this a Christie? What were you looking at?
Actually, we didn't see the whole movie. We only saw about 5 minutes of it. And the point of this exercise, of this press event, was it was held at Caltech.
Oh.
And the point of it was not to watch the movie. I'm going to go see that next week. They showed one clip. And afterwards, they had a panel on stage, including Keanu Reeves and the director of the movie, Scott Derrickson, and some Caltech scientists, real scientists, to talk about the science in the movie.
Oh, that is an interesting idea.
I thought it was
fascinating. I thought you were going to talk about digital projection.
No.
You're talking about the science in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. It was
very interesting. Now, the day the Earth stood still, as I remember it, is about aliens coming to Earth, and there's a giant robot.
Right.
And they're going to destroy the Earth, and a human, Michael Remy, has to save the planet.
In essence, that's correct.
So where's the science there? Excuse me. Were they talking about the science of alien conquerors? I don't
know. See, the original, you got it slightly wrong. The original movie was not about conquerors and about destroying the Earth. Mm. It was the alien civilizations, as represented by Klaatu, who comes to Earth and says, "You guys have to get your act together, or we will destroy you. We don't want to destroy you, but you're playing with nuclear weapons."
Yeah. Aliens never really want to destroy you. They just have to for your own good.
Look, you guys are in a backwater. We don't care what you do, but what you're starting
just don't mess with us.
But now what you're starting to do is starting to affect us, and we aren't digging it.
That's interesting. So were the scientists talking about that? What were they talking about?
They were talking about a number of things. One thing was Scott Derrickson, the director, wanted to bring a little more science into the movie than the original. For example, it was never explained in the original how Klaatu, this alien, happened to look just like us. You know, he was a human being. Well, no, he wasn't. He was an alien, but he looked just
He looked just like Michael Remy.
He looked just like Michael Remy. So, but they never explained that.
Some of us are not that good looking, but okay. Well, the general gist: two legs, two arms,
exactly,
a nose,
eyes, a nose, a mouth. Yeah.
And well, how do you explain that?
Well, they explain it in this movie as being that the alien civilizations decided to send this ambassador, and they basically had him be reborn into a human form using DNA that they had collected on a previous visit.
And so that they wouldn't upset us.
Right, so he wouldn't look too weird. And yet, Keanu Reeves apparently, you know, took this role seriously, and Kathy Bates, the woman actress who plays the Secretary of Defense,
I love her.
She's great.
I love her.
Said in a printed interview that, you know, there was a moment when Keanu Reeves looked at me and his eyes turned black, and he was really an alien, and it was really scary.
Whoa!
Yeah, it was really weird. One of the things about Thing last night was that there were about 1,400 Caltech students on hand. In Beckman Auditorium, one of the big auditoriums on campus.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
And they were invited to ask questions. And one of them said, in the movie, the Keanu Reeves character goes from being born to a full grown in a few hours by some process of, you know, not
he's made in a vat.
Yeah, not all of the science in this movie was realistic, but...
I think that's an interesting idea. You know, and one thing I do know from working with scientists is that almost all of them were inspired by science fiction. In fact, there's a very well-known book talking to scientists and saying, how did you get your start? What was it that not only that made you choose science, but that particular area of science that you chose? And very often, one of the reasons we have rockets to the moon is because science fiction wrote about it first.
That's exactly correct. And that's
inspired
one of the points
people.
That was made in this presentation was exactly that science fiction allows us to imagine things otherwise unimaginable and ask questions that actually push society and scientific inquiry forward.
Right. It's the roadmap for what humans are going to go next.
Exactly right.
I find that fascinating.
I had the great fortune of meeting James Doohan towards the end of his
Scotty.
Life. Scotty! The guy who played
the dilithium crystals are cracked!
Hey, Captain. Give it all she's got.
Hey, Captain.
And I told him, I said, you're the reason I went to study physics.
Right.
You know,
Right.
And he was pretty out of it by then, so I don't think he really understood. But
it was true. Captain!
It was true. That, it was absolutely true. I watched Star Trek when it first came on as a kid, and I was fascinated by science, and I went on to study physics.
Yeah.
Anyway, so one of the questions from the students was, given the conservation of mass and energy, how can you expect a life form to go from born to fully grown in a few hours?
Not possible! That's so, not possible.
Yeah,
see, that's what I love about science fiction, because they always can explain it away. Well, you know, aliens have figured out how to go beyond Newtonian physics.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And the point was made that this alien civilization who comes down here is millions, if not billions, of years ahead of us, because they have to be, because they got here by a spaceship.
Sure.
We can't,
they could have
that.
Made it up in any way possible. You know, they could have just, they figured it out.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So the other interesting thing was, during the clip, some of the Earth scientists are explaining to Kathy Bates, the Secretary of Defense, what's going on with this guy's life, for this tissues that he's got, DNA of weird sorts, and they're showing it on a Microsoft Surface.
Now, did Microsoft pay for that positioning?
They must have. They must have. But as soon as that thing appeared and the Windows logo was seen, the entire audience burst into laughter.
Oh, that's good. That's not the intended effect. No, they didn't go, Surface.
They
I got to get me one of those.
No, they knew that this was
they laughed.
Product placement.
yeah.
Anyway, they also updated it somewhat, this movie, to reflect the social issues of today rather than...
I can't wait to see this.
50 years ago.
So when does The Day the Earth Stood Still come out?
December 12th, next Thursday or Friday. Friday, I believe.
With Kathy Bates and Keanu Reeves?
Keanu Reeves and Jennifer Connelly as the Helen character, the woman who sort of befriends Klaatu and tries to help him in the end. In
now,
the original movie,
you.
She was like a secretary. In this
let me
one,
ask
she,
you.
In this one, she's an astrobiologist.
Oh, much better.
Much better.
Does he still say Klaatu Barada Nikta?
Probably.
We don't know. You only saw 5 minutes.
That's
Scott
right.
Wilkinson, Ultimate AV Magazine. We'll be back to your phones in just a bit. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk about high tech. Some really good news, by the way, from President-elect Obama's radio address and YouTube, I should say, his YouTube address today about, this is something I've been talking a lot about, the idea of universal broadband access. And he made a very strong statement in favor of that. And we'll talk about that a little later on. Also, the online campaign to save mother's cookies. Yes, yes, the pink and white animal crackers aren't going away after all. And a cheer rose up across the land. But first, back to the phones. We go. Mark is on the line from Santa Ana, California. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, I had a question. I want a basic DNS. Even a DHCP server combo would be nice, but a DNS server just so that I can say, okay, these are the, and maybe it should be a filtering thing, but my wife won't let me put the computers in the kids' rooms unless we're absolutely guaranteed what sites they're allowed to go to and what sites they're not allowed to go to. So I figure the easiest thing would be a DHCP server where I can just say block.
No, I got a simpler way for you to do that. That's an interesting idea. Now, how old are the kids?
7 and 10.
Okay.
12, 10 on Christmas.
So they're young enough that you could, in fact, say you can go to these 10 sites or whatever and nothing else.
Right.
And that would be, you're right, for really young kids, I think that's the best system. Instead of trying to filter out stuff, which is an imperfect science and always stuff leaks through, you have an opt-in kind of system where only the sites that you approve are allowed at all. Now, on Macs, you can do that, and I'm thinking you can do that on Vista right now. Your idea of a DHCP server is a great idea, but I've got another way you could do it with a company called OpenDNS. You've probably heard me talk about them. OpenDNS.com. This is free. You don't going to have to, unless you really want to. And Mark, I know many geeks would like to set up their own DHCP server, And you could do it probably with a router. But opendns.com, you change your DNS settings. Instead of using the DNS settings provided you by your internet service provider, DNS, in the shortcut here is the system. It's kind of like the internet's phone book. The system that looks up the server number, because the internet's run not by name, but by number, looks up the server number associated to a name. So when you go to techilabs.com, your browser says, I don't know what that is, but let me find out. It queries first your system and then your internet service provider. And ultimately, it goes to the master phone book. There are 13 domain name servers, the master servers worldwide. There are only 13 of them that have the master phone book, and finds out what server number Tech Guy Labs is at. And then it calls that number. It's very much like saying, hey, I want to call Joe Smith and the operator, you know, call 411. Give me Joe Smith's number, and that gives you a number. It's a system very similar to that. It's called the Domain Name System, or DNS. So you have to have a DNS system working, or you're not going to be able to surf. Normally, you use your internet service provider's DNS, but in fact, you can use somebody else's, and that's why I recommend opendns.com. You can create a free account there, and you can tell it which sites are allowed. I use it for older kids. You know, you don't know the five sites the older kids want to see. You know, they're going to want to go to more than that. So for older kids, I just turn on their filtering, and they have five levels of filtering, including very strict filtering that prevents almost anything that could be construed as, you know, illegal gaming, you know, not just adult sites, but also, you know, all sorts of stuff that you don't want your kids to see. But you'll see if you go to opendns.com, create a free account, and then the one technical thing you have to do is change the settings. I recommend if you've got a router, you're already using a router which has inside built into it the settings for your connection. Normally, you just get those settings from the ISP. You just say, hey, what's the domain name server? And it fills those in. But you can say in the router settings right at the front page, use these. So go to opendns.com. They have instructions there for doing that. Use these. From now on, when your kids type, I want to go to, neopets.com or whatever it is that kids go to these days. That was 2 years ago. I don't know what they go to these days. It will see, is this okay? And it will reject it if not, and it will let them in if it is. And as the kids get older, you can flip over from the kind of opt-in to opt-out filtering that is, more traditional. I use it on my system at home all the time. It's great. I don't have to worry about, you know, mistyping a name or, and it very rarely does it block something I want to go to. Now, I have it set in such a way that MySpace, I have the second strictest setting. MySpace is blocked, but you can say, for my 14-year-old kid who still uses MySpace, I can say he's allowed to use MySpace and add servers that they're allowed to see. It's a very flexible system, and it works well, and it keeps it off your computers. So that has two advantages. One, you don't have to mess with every computer. You just mess with once with your router settings, and then all the computers will get their settings from the router. And it has a second advantage of, as the kids get more sophisticated, they can't really figure out what you've done. Your password protect the router so they can't get in there, and then they can't mess with their system trying to get around the filtering. And it's free. OpenDNS.com. I've recommended it before. In fact, I think last show. I'm just really a fan of it. The more I use it, the more I like it. It also happens to be, I think, a better DNS service, a better domain directory service than others. In my opinion, including your internet service providers. There was a significant technical flaw in the domain name system that actually was a big security issue. It required every internet service provider to update their domain name servers, and still about 30% of internet service providers have not done so. And but OpenDNS was working and was secure even before the problem was announced. They do a very good job. OpenDNS.com. It's absolutely free. It speeds things up, and it gives you this great filtering capability. Schools use it. A lot, but if you look on the page, you'll see there's support. There's how to do it, what the best practices are for parents and kids and so forth. I just really think this is a great system. And if you are kind of the tech support person, yeah, I know a lot of you volunteer as tech support people for schools and churches and other businesses. This is a good one for you to know about. Set them up with that. OpenDNS.com. Hey, thanks for the call. More of your calls to come. My number, 888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte.
The Tech Guy.
Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk high tech at 888-ASK-LEO. That means computers, of course, Windows, Mac, Linux, internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, anything you want to talk about, I'd love to talk about it with you. The phone number again, 888-ASK-LEO. We have a great website if you want to go there and find out what we were talking about. You don't have to write anything down. We put links to everything at techguylabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. Make it easy for you to find. This is show 515. So when you go there, you'll James DeRuvo, our great show note taker. I need a better name. My amanuensis is there taking the notes, writing it down so you don't have to. You'll also find there a link to our chat rooms. There are two of them. If you want to join us in the IRC chat, just click the chat link at the left there. That'll take you to irc.dslextreme.com. That's a great place to go if you want to kind of be with the kids in the back of the class. The rowdy kids. The kids who, they're talking back to me. Dan and Colleen and Darth Emma and Dustin and Illuminati and Michael, Mike B and Nightingale all moderating there. So we keep it very clean and safe for your kids. It's 314 people in there right now. There's also a video stream you can watch if you click the Watch Live a stream. That's at live.twit.tv, and there's a chat room there as well. And you can participate in that chat as well. It's the Stickam chat. They provide the video stream for this. Mother's cookies. Mother's cookies. I had no idea. I missed this whole thing. It's a good thing. I might have had a heart attack. In October, Mother's Cookies announced abruptly that it was going out of business. It closed its doors. No warning. You know, bad economy. Bye-bye Mothers. Those are those pink and white frosted circus animal cookies you've seen. And they'd been around, 93 years. They've been around a long time. In fact, I have somebody in the studio with me. This is what made me think of it. I was wearing a T-shirt with the cookies on it. And it says Little Cookies. And what did it say first? It said Lights Out underneath. Lights Down. Little Cookies. It was a very sad little cookies thing. And there was a lot of talk on Twitter about it. People bemoaning it. People saying where you could go to get them. Who still had them in stock? One woman wrote on Twitter. She said, "I've got five packages in the freezer." You know, they're really. This is what Twitter was meant to be. This is what Twitter was made for. This is the. If you don't know, Twitter's the site twitter.com that. People, they've been using a lot on CNN now, so you probably do know about it. Fox is using it, but it's a and there was I just heard a little Twitter. Did you hear that from Twitterific? Little tweet. People post little short messages there and follow each other, and it's fun. Actually, I'm on there, Leo Laporte. If you want to follow me on there, and apparently if you search Twitter, there was a lot of talk about Mother's Cookies, including did they ever start like a website saying Save Mother's Cookies or forums? Yeah, there were a few sites like that. Wow. And here's the good news. Kellogg's bought them and brought them back to life. So now his T-shirt, which used to say, Lights Down, Little Cookies, say, Welcome Back, Little Cookies. Chris, where'd you find that? Do you know? They can't hear you, so you just have to tell me. Because Chris is in the studio with us. Google Mother's Cookies T-shirt, you'll probably find it. Somebody does a great site. It's like Dress You Up or something where PleaseDressMe.com. Gary Vaynerchuk's dad. Brother. PleaseDressMe.com. This is kind of a brilliant idea for a website. It's a t-shirt search engine. So if you want to say, oh, let's see, I need those Mother's Cookie t-shirt designs. And of course, I'm sure they make money on every time somebody buys a t-shirt. So really, they didn't do anything. They created a website, a little indexing routine, and now they just, you know, sit back and collect the money. Let's see if I can find a Mother's Cookies. Let's see if there's a Mother's Cookies. See how good the Please Dress Me database is. Nope, they don't have it. They have a lot of cookies t-shirts, but not Mother's Cookies. So we got to, hey, Vaynerchuk's, you got to work a little bit on the pleasedressme.com. Isn't that a brilliant idea for a website? So Mother's has been saved by Kellogg's. They bought them. Everybody on Twitter celebrates. And, you know, why not? This is in the great tradition of the internet. Let's just take credit for it. Twitter saved Mother's Cookies. Yeah, all right. Twitter saved Mother's Cookies. I'll start the meme right now. Jan in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jan.
Hey, hi, Leo.
Thanks for holding on. What can I do for you today?
A long time ago, you told us all about a site, J-Wire, which is a Wi-Fi J-Wire. Finder for your laptop.
Yep.
It's not there anymore. I can't find it.
You're kidding. Did J-Wire go out of business? That's... No, the www. Oh, you know J-Wire. What? They added an I to it or something. That's odd.
But that's not it. When you go there, that's to go and find, like...
Ads. You know. Oh. Well, no, if you go to J... I know, I remember J-Wire, and maybe they went out of business. A lot of times these free places don't last too long, but if you go to jiwire.com, they do now have... on the right, it says find Wi-Fi hotspots worldwide.
Okay, but that's not what I wanted. I wanted my computer, what the other one used to do, it had a little icon that looked like a Swiss Army knife, and it would automatically take my laptop to the best open Wi-Fi.
Wow, I don't remember that. Oh, that's cool.
I thought I got it from you.
Could have been me. Hey, I forgot. I've forgotten more stuff than half of the other people that have remembered.
So you don't
things.
Know a Wi-Fi finder for your computer?
So let's see. Let me think about this. You want to find a website that wherever you are, you'll click it, and it will say, I see where you are, and here's the nearest Wi-Fi hotspots?
No. If I'm out with my laptop, or even now, because I just moved, and I want to hook into strongest Wi-Fi in my neighborhood, it would automatically, you could set it, so it would automatically... make your computer pick up the strongest Wi-Fi.
I think that's Stumbler. And you probably...
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah. I was wrong. It's iStumbler.
Yeah, that's it. And they're still around. Oh. iStumbler.net.
Oh, what the hell is J-Wire? I'm sorry, I cursed.
J-Wire is still what it was before, which is a directory of hotspots. I could see why you'd confuse those, Jan. So there's a directory where you go, you know, I know I'm going somewhere. Okay, let me look it up. Or, you know, I just want to know where the one's near me. Stumbler is software. That's the Swiss Army. I should have known from the Swiss Army knife. And actually, I thank Kiwi Nerd in our chat room who said, oh, it's iStumbler. It's a free program. You go to iStumbler.net. This is a Mac program. I think there are other Stumblers for PCs as well. But iStumbler is a Mac program, and it looks for Wi-Fi hotspots. Now I gotta warn you, there are real risks associated with just doing what you just described, putting a program on there and says just join whatever's open. And I'll tell you just one risk that leaps to mind. I'm a bad guy. No, I'm not really a bad guy. I'll just play one on the radio for the time being. I'm a bad guy. And I want to get into your system. I want to get into your network and take a look at what you've got. Maybe capture some passwords, maybe put some malware on your system. What would be a good way to do that? I know. Set up a system with an open Wi-Fi access point. You can even label it. Oh, say free Wi-Fi here. Get your free Wi-Fi here. And leave them lying around in heavily trafficked areas, urban areas, airports, coffee shops. Just leave it lying around. You don't even have to attend it. People either... wittingly by just seeing it and saying, oh, I'll join it, or using something like this automatic utility, join your network. Now, suddenly, your network to them, not only can you record everything that they do, but you're actually, in effect, attached to their computer. It's as if you went over to their house, took your malware-laden laptop, and plugged it into the system. there are, all you have to do is have a few various worms running on this system to infest the computer, keystroke loggers, that kind of thing, or monitors that just record all the traffic as it comes out of that computer. You're going to harvest all sorts of good things. So it's very, very risky just to kind of join, you know, unknown Wi-Fi hotspots. I'd be very careful about doing that, Jan. It's not a, probably not a good idea. Now, if you're at home and you don't have high-speed internet and you notice that your neighbor has high-speed internet, but your neighbor, like most people, your neighbor doesn't listen to this show, so your neighbor didn't secure his Wi-Fi hotspot, his Wi-Fi internet, and you could join it. Now, here's my advice to you. Yeah, we all do that from time to time. I think of it as borrowing a cup of Wi-Fi. It has that potential risk I just described, so understand that. But I think also as a good neighbor, it's not nice just to take their Wi-Fi and not, you know, for no good reason. Here's what I suggest. Your neighbor's got an open access point. You know it's dangerous. We all know it's dangerous. Maybe he's doing it on purpose, maybe not. Go find that person. Knock on a few doors. I notice your Wi-Fi. You know, let me tell you something. I listen to Leo, and he tells me that the best thing to do to secure your Wi-Fi is turn on something called WPA encryption. You should really have that on. I'd like to make you a deal. I'd like to help you with, you know, maybe help pay for a little bit of your internet. I'd like to keep using it. We'll turn on WPA. I'll set a password we both know. You'll be secure. I'll defray some of your expenses, and I won't have to pay for a full-time internet connection. We'll just share. What do you think? That would be the good neighbor thing to do. You're helping them. You're keeping them secure. Maybe helping yourself out by getting an expensive internet. That's, to me, that's the way to handle that. Now, if you're just wandering around and you need to quickly check your email and you notice you're sitting on this curb and there's some free Wi-Fi, somebody's got a access point called Linksys or Default that doesn't have a password, okay. Knowing the risks, go ahead and use it. But if it's your neighbor and you're going to use it day in, day out, I'd knock on the door and help them out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. I'm sorry, my hair's all messed up. I was rocking out. Rocking out. Luis Oliveira running those sweet tunes at the control board. I appreciate it. Thank you, Rebecca Baker on drums and headphones. And Robert on the line from Long Beach, California. Hi, Robert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Robert?
I'm doing pretty good. I've got a question. That my wife has an iPhone. It's not connected to AT&T, but it was my old iPhone, and she's basically using it as a iPod.
Like a touch.
Like a touch. And I've got the new iPhone, and I use a Mac computer, and she uses a PC.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if there's a way to sync up our calendars, either
yes.
with iCal or with Google.
Yes.
So, okay.
I would use, here's how I would do it. I use Google Calendar as my primary calendar, and this is what I would recommend. Google Calendar now has added, if you go to Google Calendar, calendar.google.com, and see at the top there is an iCal sync now. So that'll get it to your Mac. So any change you make on your Mac will go to your central Google Calendar and vice versa. And then there are many ways to sync Google Calendar with Outlook and other calendar tools on the Windows side. Does she sync the old iPhone with Windows, or does she not sync it?
She doesn't sync it, no.
See, that's going to be an issue.
Right.
Because she has no wireless. Well, let me ask you, does Wi-Fi work still on the iPhone if you don't have a carrier?
Yes, it does.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
she does have internet access. Well, a couple of things she could do. One, she could use the Google Calendar instead of the iPhone calendar.
Okay, on the iPhone itself or on her computer?
On the iPhone and the computer. In fact, so could you. I mean, the Google Calendar is very, to me, is everything you want. It does support the iCal Cal standard. And there are ways to sync it with Windows machines. So if she wants to sync it to her Windows machine, again, go to calendar.google.com. You can sync it to Outlook. If she wants to sync it to her iPhone, that's a little trickier. I'm trying to think of if there's any kind of standard way to do it via just the internet. You know, if she were syncing the iPhone to a computer, no problem. But just by the internet, I think not. But all you have to do is go to calendar.google.com and Safari on the iPhone, save that out. If she has updated the updated iPhone software on the iPhone, she can actually make a little icon on the iPhone desktop that will be that Google Calendar. Instead of tapping the iPhone calendar, the built-in iPhone calendar, use the Google Calendar. Yeah, Google Calendar works really nicely on the iPhone.
She can make an icon actually for the iPhone itself.
Depends on what version. If she has if she's updated, I don't know if you've updated the firmware on that phone or not. Okay, yeah. You can, when you're in the Safari on an iPhone, if you have the version two software or later, when you're in Safari on a page, press the plus button right at the bottom of the page, and then you can add to home screen.
Okay.
And that makes a little icon for that particular web page. Make one for Google Calendar. She won't have to log in again. Maybe every few weeks you have to, you know, Google makes you re-log in just to verify right. You are who you say you are. But most of the time, the Google Calendar works beautifully on the iPhone. They say, oh, you know, the website says, oh, I see you're using an iPhone, and reformats it to fit the iPhone page. And then so she can add calendar items. As long as she's on Wi-Fi, she can add calendar items, change them, and so forth. Now, when she's not on Wi-Fi, she won't have a calendar.
Right, right. Interesting. Well, listen, I appreciate your time, and
sure.
I love your show, too, by the way.
Thanks, Robert. I really appreciate your call. You know, Google Calendar is rapidly becoming the default calendar out there. And if you use any other system like Outlook's calendaring, Entourage on the Mac, or use Apple's iCal, many of the calendars on Linux, if you use any other calendar system, you can always sync it up with Google Calendar. And that's what I do. They just added iCal syncing using something called CalDAV. And I think that's a fantastic thing. So my calendar is now Google Calendar. That's what I use. And you can, by the way, you could say, this is our shared husband and wife calendar. This is my stuff. This is her stuff. We only share the shared stuff. There's all sorts of ways to do it. You know, Little League games, the kids' schedules, Google Calendar. This is, in my opinion, you know, there are a number of Google Docs programs that are pretty great. Google Mail is great. I'm not crazy about the Google Word processor. Google Spreadsheets, I use that a lot because you can share those. But really, Google Calendars, that's the bee's knees. Calendar.google.com. And, of course, free to use. Google's, you know, whole strategy essentially is to get you using their stuff. The more of their stuff you use, the more they... Now, this is the deal with the devil you're making. The more they know about where you go on the web, what you're doing. They if you read carefully all the agreements you're making with Google, they say, we're not following you, particularly you, but you are agreeing to allow us to aggregate your data and use it. For instance, I don't know they're doing this for a fact, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if they machine scan your appointments and then make sure that you have appropriate ads on the sidebar there. That's how Google works. They sell these ads. They sell these keywords. In fact, it was used heavily in the presidential campaigns. It was actually quite interesting. Both campaigns had the strategy. If there was a controversy, if there was, you know, a Reverend Ayers or a Reverend Wright, rather, or a Bill Ayers controversy, they'd buy those keywords so that when you did a search for it, you'd see an ad that led to the campaign's story about it. And you see that all the time now on Google. That's how they make their money, and that's how they make billions and billions of dollars a year. To me, it's a worthwhile deal because the software is so great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls to come. Stay here. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet. a really great price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo's a number. Boy, the chat room's going crazy with suggestions for Google Calendar. There are about as many different ways to use Google Calendar as there are users. A number of good Firefox plugins are out there. Ken suggests something called Provider for Google Calendar 0.5.1, and that's for Firefox. So it allows, they say, allows bidirectional access to Google Calendar, which means Sunbird and Lightning, which are two other calendar programs, can read and write the Google Calendar using this Firefox as plugin, as an intermediary. I use a really good, lately you haven't been able to download it, but a really good pop-up Firefox edition that pops up a Google Calendar on the Firefox page. There are a lot of really useful extensions for Firefox. It's one of the reasons I use Firefox. So I misspoke. That's a Thunderbird add-in that Ken was talking about. Provider for Google Calendar is a Thunderbird add-on. Thunderbird is the email program that it comes or with the full Firefox package, or you can download separately. 8888 Ask Leo. We'll give you, if you got suggestions for Google Calendar plugins or anything, we'll get them. I'll get as many as we can on the show notes. We'll pass them along to James DeRuvo. The show notes are at techguylabs.com. Richard is on the line from Ontario, California. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
Love your show. Fine. Thank you. Hey, I'm thinking of building a home theater PC.
Mm-hmm.
And wondering if you had any ideas about the MSI Media Live Diva motherboard.
I like that motherboard. Now, I am not a reviewer of motherboards. That's a pretty specialized field.
Uh-huh.
So I just go with the people who have the time, the wherewithal, the equipment to review motherboards, and I follow their recommendations. So there's two sites I'm going to send you to. MSI in general is very good, and I think good things about the Diva, but never tried it, so I'm giving you kind of a second-hand opinion. You want the first-hand opinion? Two sites, you probably already know about them, but in fact, anybody who's building his own or her own computer should know about these. These are enthusiast sites. One is Anand Tech. Started by A-N-A-N-D, Anand Tech. Started by, he was a high school kid at the time, Anand Shimpy.
Uh-huh.
And has now become the, I would say, the enthusiast site for parts. So if you know, parts being motherboards, CPUs, video cards, that kind of thing. He's even expanded now to digital cameras and stuff. But that, click the motherboard tab there, and he'll give you reviews on all of theirs. When you're talking about particularly home theater PCs, my friend Ryan Shrout's PC Perspective is another really good site, pcper.com. Very similar to a non-tech, but he has lately been focusing a lot on home theater systems. And, you know, generally, these days, I generally tell people, boy, you can go out and get a Dell or a good computer from many manufacturers for much less than you'd get they pay when you build it yourself. You don't save money building it yourself. All you gain is control. You get a lot of control over it, right? But not don't do it to save money. But I have to say, one area where you might like to do it yourself is that home theater PC. The integration right now on home theater PCs is often a compromise. They often don't do a great job. You might get a better system if you design it yourself with features that you're particularly interested in. So, and this is one case where I think building yourself may not be such a bad idea. Are you going to use Windows Media Center, or are you going to use one of the open source programs?
No, I'm going to use Ultimate.
Okay. Vista Ultimate, and use the Media Center capabilities of that.
Right.
You know, there's Myth, and there's Myth TV and Sage TV. There are a lot of other, and I would look at these too, just to see, you know, what's out there. But there are a lot of ways to do it. But people do seem very much to like a Windows Media Center. So I would go to pcper.com and look at his motherboard. He actually has a really nice feature called his hardware leaderboard, where he picks the best hardware in a variety of categories: dream system, high-end system, mid-range system, and budget system. And you could see what he likes best for motherboards, given, you know, what the costs are, things like that. Great. I'll ask Ryan, and in fact, if I can get him on the line, I'll ask him to call in the show and see what he thinks of the MSI Diva as a home theater motherboard. You've got a lot of decisions. If you're building a home theater PC, there's a lot of stuff you have to do. You have to figure out what video card to use, you know, not just motherboard. I think the processor is pretty much a given. You're going to probably use an Intel processor. If you're at a budget, the Core 2 Duo. If you're not on a budget, the new i7 processors. But the video card's significant because you got to have tuner capabilities. If you want to watch premium content like Blu-ray or HD content, then there's a whole other issue of, you know, I have to make sure you have a compliance with this HDCP copy protection scheme. That gets very, very complicated. That's why if you're a geek, it's fun and it's interesting. If you're not just buying off the shelf system, it's a lot easier. But if you are a geek and you're willing to do the study and the really work on it, and willing, by the way, to also self-warranty it, because remember, you build your own system and something goes wrong, you can't go to the manufacturer. You're the manufacturer. Yeah, you can't go to MSI and say, I think it's your motherboard. They'll just say, well, it could be your processor. It could be your video card. You've got no one place to go. So you're warrantying it. You're the support for that. And that's the real negative to doing this. But on the other hand, if you're willing to do that, you're willing to learn what you need to know, this is a great way to get kind of the ultimate home theater PC, one that's really much better than the ones you see off the shelf. Bigger hard drives, better, more capabilities, that kind of thing. Sterling's in Piqua, Ohio. Hey, Sterling, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hey, how are you? Happy holidays.
Hey, I'm doing great. Watching the snow, having a great time.
All right.
Hey, I got two questions for you.
Yep.
The first one is on the, I got a security update that's critical for an SQL Server 2000 Service Pack 4 that will not go through.
Uh-oh.
I talked to Microsoft on it, and they had me do a couple things, and it still won't go through, so they sent me to the SQL Server 2000 people, but you got to pay money to talk to them.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
I'm kind of wondering if, do I even need this thing? What is it for? Because I just have an XP with, you know, with Office 2003 professional. Do I even need this?
You're not using SQL Server?
Never even heard of it before.
And they're trying to push you an update to SQL Server and you're not running it.
Bingo.
What's the, do you have the number of the hotfix or?
You mean the KB948110? Kind of comes after it.
That's the one. KB84?
No, KB94 0110.
That KB stands for knowledge base. Okay. And the knowledge base article is the one, if you go to support.microsoft.com, you can enter in that KB number and learn what exactly it is. My suspicion is it wouldn't be pushing that if you weren't using it as a component. It's not you that's using it, but something that you installed is using it.
Okay.
So is there anything particular that unusual that you do in your system that you might?
Other than playing games in Microsoft Office, no.
I don't think it's part of Office. I don't know why they're pushing it.
Office professional because of the business aspects of it.
Oh, yeah. It might be.
Because of the business part of the Outlook and so forth, the business management.
Well, you have Access on there, right?
Yes.
Which is their database. Yeah, it might be. That might be where it's coming from.
Okay.
940110, is that the number?
948110.
Oh, 948110. I'm just looking, just to save you the trouble, because that's what I'm here for.
And you're so good at it.
Security update for SQL Server 2000. Can't imagine why they'd want to install that. Known issues. Oh my gosh, the whole list of known issues is going on and on. You're going to, yeah, I don't think you need it.
Okay.
But I would go to support.microsoft.com, okay. Search for 948110.
Okay.
Read this whole thing, and it'll give you some idea of what it does. It says known issues with a security update might tell you why it's blocked. It may, SharePoint. Do you use SharePoint?
Never heard of it.
Okay. Thank you, Microsoft! I don't think you're using, I don't know why this is trying to update it. Smart update's supposed to be smart enough. The Windows update's supposed to be smart enough not to update stuff you don't use.
Okay.
So I would say, yeah, just ignore it.
So I can just kind of delete it at the update.
Yeah.
So it won't show
yeah.
up again.
Well, it's going to continue to bug you every time you go to update. It's going to try to do it.
Well, it bugs me every night, so.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah, the update system for Microsoft leaves something to be desired, shall we say.
To be desired.
Something to be desired. I can't give you much more help than just say, look at this knowledge base update. But I'll be honest with you, you'll have more information than you would get if you paid the money for the SQL Server support. It's an update that, you know, it's a security update for a program you don't run. Why they're pushing it at you is the real question. I don't know. If you're not running SQL Server, which is a database program for, you know, for big, big enterprise installations, and I doubt very much you're running that. So why it's pushing it at you, I don't know. And I wish they would say there's some way to turn it off. You might look an update and see if you can say, I don't want that anymore. I don't want that. Maybe by accident you clicked a button that said, give me everything, even if I don't need it. Just give me it. Give me it all. Give me everything. Todd, Pasadena, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Todd.
Hello?
Run to the phone, Todd. You're live on the air. Millions of people are listening for the words of wisdom from Todd. Nice. Now the pressure's on, isn't it? Hi,
yeah,
Todd.
Exactly.
What can I do?
Exactly.
What can I do for you, Todd?
Hey, listen, I've got a BlackBerry Curve from AT&T. And,
I love it.
I
love
videos
it.
On it. And oh. For some reason, I can't do it. I try to download hardware for it, and
Real issue is the Curve. You can play videos, but they have to be they have to be 3GP videos, very low quality, because you just don't have the processor power to play back anything else. So what you're probably going to have to do is make sure that those videos are re-encoded for playback on a cell phone to the 3GP codec.
Okay.
Does that make any sense? What I just said?
Absolutely not. But
well, here's the deal. You can't play back the kinds of videos that you would play back on other devices because it does not have a fast enough processor.
Right. And you can't buy like an upgrade or anything like that for it?
No. It's not a software issue. It's a hardware issue. So given that it doesn't have a fast enough processor, you have to encode the video in kind of a dumber format that is easier to play back. Fewer frames, less resolution. It's called 3GP. Look for a 3GB converter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk about high tech. Let's get back to the phones. Lots of calls here, and Kurt's next from Thousand Oaks, California. Hi, Kurt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Happy early Festivus.
Festivus for the rest of us. What is it you're supposed to do for Festivus? Is it involves a giant...
Well, I've set up the Festivus pole, and I've got the one light on it, and now I'm thinking, what should I put around it?
You know, I really wish Festivus had kind of taken off. I don't understand why it didn't. Have you done the airing of grievances, or is that later this month?
Yes, in the airing of grievances, that's what I want to tape, so I need to look for a video recorder.
Well, let's do the feats of strength right now. Give me a question.
I looked at CNET, and at their, it's basically just best home movie camcorders, and they've got the Canon HD20 and the HF100, the Vixias.
Yep. I have an HV30, which I adore. A couple of the decisions that you have to make, of course, are high def or not.
Right.
I would say go high def. Why not?
Yeah, I've got really, a high-def TV, so...
Not really a premium at this point, and remember that, you know, you're recording these not for you today, but for the future generations to come.
Right, now, and that's the other issue I have is I read some reviews, and apparently some people are having some issues with transferring it onto disk. One of them looks like it's more of a flash-based, and then the other one looks like it's more of a... copied onto a hard drive.
Right. So that's the next decision is to what medium am I going to record? Most camcorders until very recently had tape.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm going from a DVR.
Tape's kind of fading out, and more people are recording to flash media like your digital still camera does, or recording to hard drives, or recording to discs. I don't like the disk solution. The disk solution, in my opinion, they record to a mini DVD, is only for people who don't have a computer.
Okay.
So they have no way of putting it on a DVD, so that the only thing they can do is record in the camera to a DVD. But there are all sorts of negatives to it. There's lower quality because it has to record in MPEG-2. The discs are relatively expensive. You can't play them back until you finalize them, which means you can't record to them anymore. So it's just, to me, it's not an ideal format.
Okay. So
fine if you don't have a computer, but you have a computer, right?
What's this computer you speak of?
Of what do you speak, this computer? If you ever think you're going to want to edit the video in any way, that absolutely strongly recommend you get one that's not disc-based.
Well, yeah, I'm not even looking at the disc-based. It's between those two. You know, they're both about the same price.
Hard drive or... Because the HG20 is a hard drive, yes?
Right, HG20 is a hard drive. The other one's more...
Now, here's what I don't like about hard drive-based. In many ways, hard drive's a good idea, but you fill it up, and you have to pull it off.
Yeah, right.
With tape and flash, you can have another piece of flash or another tape and pop it in.
Okay.
So unless you're bringing the computer with you everywhere you go, I don't like recording to a hard drive. It also adds size and weight. And the hard drive spins, so it, which could be good or bad, but I'm going to say this wrong, a centripetal force, I think. I can't remember. It's either centripetal or centrifugal. I think it's centripetal force. It's like a gyroscope.
Right.
It has momentum.
Okay, because it's got 60 megs, I think it said.
Yeah, it records gigs. It records a lot.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Records a lot, but eventually it fills up, and then what are you going to do? You have to find a computer and pull it off. So to me, the choice really is down to tape or flash.
Okay.
I like the tape, and the reason I bought the HV30 is it's tape based. It's a very good camera in every respect. It's just like the HG20, but it's tape based.
Okay, like the DVR tapes used to be.
Yeah, no, like you know the little DVC little DV tapes that you pop out. They're like this, you know, they're the size of a wooden matchbox.
Yeah, right.
The advantage here is you've got full quality archival backup of your video.
Right.
So, you know, it's there. It's on the tape. You want to go on a long trip, you bring 10 tapes.
Okay.
Now, the flash, flash has got cheap enough. You can bring a bunch of flash, but it's still more expensive than the tape. Of course, it's reusable.
Okay.
The problem with the hard drive and the flash also, and this is what you were thinking of and what CNET was talking about, is the format they record in now is something called AVC HD.
Right.
It's a form of H.264, which is a very good codec, but you have to have updated software to use it. So you have to have the latest iMovie or the latest Final Cut or the latest Premiere Elements. I don't think Windows Movie Maker will handle it unless they might have updated it. In other words, you have to have very recent software. The new Pinnacle Studio will handle it. And it's very dense. That's the problem with high-def recordings is a lot of data. So you have to have a fast computer, and there's, you know, importing it's kind of slow. Editing it can be challenging.
Okay, and the HV30 that you have, you said you have the HV30?
Yeah, that records to a standard DV format.
But that's not
everything,
high-def, or is it?
It is high-def.
Okay.
It's HDV format. So everything can import it. That can import high def. I like the HV30.
Okay.
I've been very happy with it. I like the idea of tape. I also have the Panasonic SD5, the little flash-based one. Very compact. Tape has to be bigger, right?
This is right.
Very compact because it's recording to an SD card. And a beautiful video. It's got three CCDs. It's just gorgeous. It's small. It's light. It's inexpensive. You know, all of these now are $500 or $600 at best.
Right,
often
yeah.
less. The prices
all these
have Canada tumbled.
Are around, right around six.
Yeah, they've really tumbled. So I would say, you know, you're not going to go too far wrong. None of these are going to be bad. You just have to consider the medium you're recording to and what will work best for your use.
Right. Well, you know, it's basically, you know, home video and then transferring it later to a disc.
Right.
For playing.
Yeah, you're going to use a computer as an intermediary just to edit. Then I think tape is good. Then you have the tapes, right? So you transfer it to the hard drive, you edit it, you burn the disc. But the tape was cheap. You keep it somewhere. And it's kind of archival backup in case you, you know, want to go back and do it again or something.
Right.
Or maybe you lose the disk.
With it aging and...
Well, it will, yeah. After a few decades, it's going to... Maybe 10 years, it's not going to be good anymore.
Okay.
By then, no one will care because the truth about all this is we all shoot hundreds of hours of video that no one will ever look at again.
I know. I haven't downloaded my stuff on my other
After all of that, I'm just telling you, I know the truth. I have video somewhere of my darling daughter being born 16 years ago. But probably, you know, I don't know where it is. you take the, it's fun to take it. You think kids are going to want to see it again. I like tape. At least you got a copy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet.
Forget.
DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, taking calls, talking tech at 8888-ASK. Leo, that's my number. If you want to join us and converse about this amazing world, this amazing digital world, whether it's Mac, Windows, Linux, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, digital cameras, 8888-ASK, Leo, 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. You go there, and James DeRuvo has been writing down every pearl of wisdom to emerge from my mouth. So it's a very short page. And you can go there, and you can find it all, get the links. You don't have to remember anything. Techguylabs.com. While you're there, we also have links to, on the left, the chat room. Great place to kind of converse in the background. 354 people in there making fun of me. You go to go there directly at irc.dslextreme.com. There's also a live video feed that's available for you at live.twit.tv, live.twit.tv. And there's a chat room associated with that, a Stickam chat too. So there's quite a bit going on. Lots of things. Oh, and there's live. Yeah, there's everything. It's just live everything. So I got the storm finally, the BlackBerry storm. I thank Bob Goebel for making sure that I got it from Verizon, and I've been playing with it. I have to say, it's a very impressive. This is BlackBerry's attempt to compete with the iPhone, and it's a pretty impressive phone. The touch screen is unusual because, unlike the iPhone, just touching an icon doesn't do anything. It highlights it, but it doesn't select it. In order to actually click on something or even type a letter on a keyboard, you have to press, and the screen kind of goes in a little bit. And then you can type, which is a little odd. It's a little strange. It's kind of an odd sensation. The keyboard is an on-screen keyboard, and I think a lot of BlackBerry fans are not going to like that. If you've used a Curve or the older BlackBerries, even the earliest BlackBerries. My first BlackBerry wasn't even a phone. It was a pager that had a little keyboard on it. BlackBerry really has been known for the keyboards on its phones. This one is more like the iPhone. It has a on-screen keyboard, and like the iPhone, it's a little tough to use. Might even be a little tougher because of this thing where you got to press. A little harder. Now, the keyboard and the phone will rotate as you rotate the phone. The screen will rotate. So that's kind of nice. You can get the screen bigger or smaller. And it has a much better media player than most earlier BlackBerries. And it is a smart enough, fast enough phone that probably will be able to. In fact, I know it will be able to play higher quality video than the Curve. We had a caller last hour saying, I can't play video back on my Curve. Yeah, the Curve doesn't have a whole lot of processor power. This Storm, this latest BlackBerry, absolutely has enough processor power. In fact, if you go to the media player on it, you'll see it can play back very high quality H.264 video. That's kind of what you'd expect because, after all, this is, you know, that big screen real estate. It's the same screen resolution as the Bold, but it's big. You know, it's really high resolution. It really looks good. I'm playing back a trailer on this thing now, and it really looks great. You might hear it in the background. That's the other thing. This has very good speakers, so you don't need to hook up headphones. Does support regular headphones. You don't need to. You can listen to the video without hooking up headphones, and you can have a speakerphone and so forth. I mean, I have to say, it's pretty impressive. It's a nice phone. Is it an iPhone killer? Well, now I'm trying to be very objective here. I do use an iPhone, and I know some people think maybe I'm an Apple fanboy because I happen to like Macs also. So I want to be very objective, and I really want to give it some time. I've given it some time, but I haven't had it more than a few days. Oh, you can see it has a very loud ring also. It has a very... I had it turned all the way up. These speakers are so loud, I turned it all the way up, and I couldn't figure out where that very loud beeping was coming from. Every time I got a text message, it made a loud sound on the phone. I think that there are a lot of people who will like this a lot, but I think the real key is a BlackBerry is basically primarily an email messaging device. That's what BlackBerry made its name as, and really where its focus is. And the on-screen keyboard is, in my opinion, just not good enough to do touch typing. I think I can type much faster on my Curve. I think the Bold, if you really are a BlackBerry fan, and messaging is important to you, the Bold is probably a better choice. The same resolution screen, a beautiful color screen, good enough to play back video. I wouldn't make it that its primary function. And I think that's probably part of the problem with the Storm is it's a little bit schizophrenic. What are you trying to do, BlackBerry? Are you trying to appeal to the BlackBerry audience? Well, you're not going to do that because of the on-screen keyboard. Are you trying to appeal to the iPhone audience? Well, it's a little prosaic for that audience. It's not quite the media player that the iPhone is. It's betwixt and between. It's kind of in between the two. I'll keep using it for a week or so to get a better idea, but my initial reaction is it's not an iPhone killer. It's not going to wean me away from the iPhone, and I've talked to many other people who feel pretty much the same way. In fact, David Pogue, the New York Times columnist, gave it a rather scathing review. I like it better than David liked it. I think it's pretty impressive. It's certainly a beautiful screen, and it has a lot of great capabilities. But there are a lot of good applications out for the BlackBerry, and it'll run on the Storm. Although, you know, Apple just announced 10,000 applications are available now for its iPhone. It's pretty hard to compete. Of course, 8,000 of them are flashlights, so maybe it's not as hard as it looks. I'd say I like the Storm. I'll give it a 4 out of 5. But if you're an iPhone user, you're not going to feel bad that you still have an iPhone. And if you're a BlackBerry user right now, a Curve user, or a Pearl user, I think you're going to want to look twice. I think you might want to look at the Bold instead. You'll be happier with it because of the better keyboard. Joe's on the line from Kansas City. Hi, Joe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. I just got to tell you, my brother Anthony introduced me to your show. I've been hooked ever since. You make every IT day for us completely bright. We love it.
Aren't you nice? Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I'll tell you what, this is my issue. I post a lot of videos online. I actually do freelance work for Current TV. I post to YouTube.
Great.
And I can't find the right mix to get it output. I actually bought a MacBook to get into iMovie and to get into Final Cut to find the right mix to get it up. It just seems so pixelated and...
Yeah.
Kind of
this is a black. This is a black art. Let me tell you, Joe. And the people who do this are spend a lot of time finagling it. Most of them, by the way, use QuickTime Pro.
Okay.
Compressor, which comes with Final Cut Studio, is in there. Is I am told by many professionals, not as good. QuickTime Pro is what you want to use, and often it requires a video by video fine tuning. The more motion that's in a video, the more keyframes you need. You can compress it more if there's not a lot of motion because you use fewer keyframes. I mean, if there's black levels are important, then you need to compress it less. There are a lot of little ifs, ands, and buts. However, my general advice is H.264. I presume you're using that.
Yes. I have used that before, and it puts that weird electric static around movement. Have you run into that before?
You know, that's what's called digital artifacting, where in order to compress video, and video has to be compressed heavily. The video you're seeing on YouTube is compressed within an inch of its life. It has to be. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to download it.
Yeah.
You know, good high definition video would be 19 megabits a second. And if you get it down, you can get it down really good quality high def video down to 4 or 5 megabits a second. Who has 4 or 5 megabits a second? Very few people. So they've got to compress it even more, and they don't want to spend the bandwidth on that either.
Sure.
They want to compress it even more. So the reason I say H.264 is because most of these sites, the sites you mentioned, are converting it to Flash anyway. Flash does best with a source file. It's H.264.
Okay.
By the way, you might notice just yesterday, YouTube added high def support. So you're shooting.
That.
Yeah, if you're shooting high def, and I presume you are, upload high def, you know, either 720p or 1080i or even 1080p. Upload the highest quality you can, H.264, because it will YouTube will preserve that as well as doing a lower quality version for people who don't have the bandwidth. So you want to make that available. If you're getting artifacting, whatever, whether it's halos or, you know, where you really see it is sometimes solid blacks or solid colors get chunky. You know, it doesn't look like one solid color. It looks like three colors that are kind of repeated over and over again. That's all from overcompression. Okay. But it's not just a slider. You know, it's a number of sliders. It's the number of bits per second is you know, what you're playing with, just like in an MP3. You know, an MP3, if you encode it 128 kilobits per second, is they call it, quote, CD quality. It's going to have a certain quality. If you do 160 kilobits, it's better. 192 is better still. If you get better quality, the more bits per second. It's the same with video. But also there's the issue of frame rate. Yeah. There's the issue of keyframes. And that comes from how the encoding is done. What the system does is say, we're going to pick this as a keyframe, and we're going to go 30 frames or 20 frames before recording another keyframe. And in between keyframes, we'll only look at changes to the frame. And the number of keyframes definitely impacts the quality. Now, I'm not an expert on this. Sometime, I'll get Alex Lindsay on, and we'll bore everybody to tears talking about the pros and cons and stuff. But if you don't like the quality you're getting, Joe, the best thing to do is play, you know, use QuickTime Pro. It's $30, and play with the sliders until you've maximized quality for file size. It's a trade-off. It's just like a seesaw. More quality, bigger file size. Less quality, smaller file size. And we're just trying to find the right balance on that seesaw so that we get pretty good quality for a reasonable file size. And again, if you do it in H.264, that's going to give you the best quality for the smallest file sizes. It's the most flexible codec is what we call these. Hey, thanks for the call. Good luck with your video. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. I'd love to hear from you if you want to talk about tech. Got about a little more than half an hour left in the show. Talk about anything that's on your mind. Let's get back to the phones. Rick's on the line from Glendale, California. Hi, Rick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, good to talk with you. I need your help.
Doing some
Christmas gift shopping for my kids' grandparents, and one of the suggested items is a digital picture frame. Heard of them, but never seen them, and I got questions for you. I want a rotating show in it as opposed to just one still image. I want something that we will update. They are not tech savvy. I don't want to pay a monthly plan, so I'd like a frame where we can go visit them, insert a memory card, update it, and then ideally take the card with us. So we'd have to have some memory in the frame. Like I said, I've never seen these. I don't know what to look for or what I should pay.
I can do you one better. There actually are digital picture frames that allow you to update locally. And then automatically upload them to Grandma's picture frame.
Okay, when you say update locally, you mean I have to have the frame at my computer here?
No. You upload something to a website, or you have them on your system, and the picture frame downloads them.
Oh, like via
Wi-Fi. She has to have a way to get online, either Wi-Fi or you could hook it up to a phone. Are the grandparents wired?
You know, I don't even know. I know they've got a computer. I don't know if they're wired. So, I mean, looking at that as one option, what if they're not and I just want to use a flash drive or something?
All of them have those basic features. So, okay. They all do slideshows.
Okay. So
they all will allow you, almost all of them, except the most cheap ones, which you're not going to buy because you are a caring son-in-law.
Of course. But again, they're not going to touch this other than to maybe occasionally dust it. So it's all on us. And I think that us having to update it via versus a phone encourages us to visit, which they will love.
There you go. Or you can even mail them an SD card. Almost all of them take memory cards.
Okay.
So you put the pictures on them. You pop the memory card into the frame. It does the slideshow.
Okay.
And then You send them another card, they send you the old card back, and it's got a new slideshow in it.
And one's as good as another as far as the frames?
No.
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 So where would you look
at? Actually, there are a lot of good ones. The one that, my favorite is kind of one you never heard of called Memory Frame. And you probably have to buy it online. I don't know if it's carried in general. Here's the deal on memory picture frames, digital picture frames. You're really paying for the screen. The better quality, bigger screen, the more it's going to cost.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I'd rather buy online anyway, so that's not a problem for me.
Yeah.
And your recommendation carries a huge amount of weight for me, so I'll check that one out.
I would look at it's $200, which is, I think, very fair for a 10-inch frame. It's like an 8x10, right?
Right.
Normally they're smaller 5x7s. This is a nice one, 8x10. It's a beautiful screen. It has its own 256 megs of memory. So if you want to make that trip and every once in a while to grandma's house and load more pictures than you can, but it also will allow you to, it has a card reader. So it allows you to put a card in there so you can mail them a card. It'll even play video and has audio. So you can mix stills with videos.
Mm.
Grandparents love that.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lee.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Memory Frame MF8104, $200. You can Google it. I'm looking at it on there. It's from Digital Spectrum, and I'm looking on the Digital Spectrum store. $200. I think this is the frame. Now there are a lot of other very good ones. Everybody makes them now, but the features are fantastic on this, and it does have the bonus audio in the background for the slideshow. But if you've got internet access, it can download pictures from Flickr or Windows Live Spaces or WebShots. So you can upload your pictures to a Flickr site and grandma and grandpa will get them automatically. You'd have to configure it, obviously, for them. You don't have to have a subscription, and that's a big difference. A lot of these frames, you pay $200 for the frame, and then you have to pay a monthly or yearly subscription so that you can get new pictures into the frame. If you don't care about the wireless, the Wi-Fi access, you can get them even less. But $200 for Wi-Fi access, a 10.4-inch very bright screen, quality screen. This is remarkable. This is the Digital Spectrum Memory Frame MF8104. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive device. 8x10. That's good looking. I think that is probably, there are a lot of good choices for holiday gifts. If you're willing to spend as much as $100, $200, a digital camera, a GPS. But for grandparents, man, there's nothing better than a digital picture frame. I think that's a great idea, especially because they can automatically, you take new pictures of kids, they can get them automatically if they have Wi-Fi. Tyler's in Dallas, Texas. Hi, Tyler. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I had
a quick question for you. I'm trying to start up or incorporate all of my different accounts into a centralized blog type thing. And what I'm kind of caught up on right now is I made a WordPress blog, and I'm trying to get my Twitter account paired to that so I can have it my last five tweets or whatever show up on there. Now, they do have an option where you can do it through RSS feeds. And I would
do it with a WordPress plugin. There are a lot of great plugins. I use Alex King's Twitter Tools. It's free.
And I did see that one. However, if you have not a free or a free account through their website.
Oh, you have a WordPress.com account.
Yes. I do have my own personal domain, but at first I was just going to try and post it off.
So if WordPress.com doesn't allow you to add WordPress plugins?
No, from my knowledge, it does not, no.
Okay. Tyler, let me look into this, because there's got to be a way to do it. I see people doing it. Let me look into it. We got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme. For high-speed internet at an amazingly low price, visit DSLExtreme.com or call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Well, I've got somebody in the chat room who says that you can get Twitter posts into your free WordPress.com account. The problem is the free account at WordPress.com really doesn't allow you to do much to modify the layout or add plugins or anything like that. There is a JavaScript, a little JavaScript badge that you can, get from Twitter, but it only shows your most recent tweet. And frankly, it looks ugly as sin. And every time I see it, I think, oh, this is somebody who can't figure out a better way to do it. It looks like it came from the 80s. So it's very old school. So we'll keep looking for a better way to do it. There's got to be a better way to do it. Fopo Gigio in the chat room reminds me that if you have a Windows update you don't want to see anymore, in the Windows update window, right click on the update and select hide, and you won't see it anymore. There you go. Just do that. And as long as we're talking about the chat room, Jammer B in the chat room sent me a note that I thought was very encouraging. He listened to President-elect Obama's weekly address. He's using YouTube now. You can watch it on YouTube. I guess it will eventually be once he's inaugurated, the weekly presidential radio address, which will be on YouTube too, as it should be. He talked about his economic recovery plan, including, and this is where I get excited, getting new computers into schools and ensuring that all schools, libraries, and hospitals have internet access. Here's the quote Jammer B sent me. It is unacceptable that the United States ranks 15th in the world in broadband adoption. Here, in the country that invented the internet, every child should have the chance to get online, and they'll get the chance when I'm president because, I sound like I'm running, because that, I'm quoting him here, because that is how we will strengthen America's competitiveness in the world. This is something I have been saying for a long time, that we needed, just as in the Great Depression, part of the New Deal recovery plan from President Roosevelt was rural electrification, things like the Tennessee Valley Authority, bringing electricity to every home in the United States. We need a rural internetification. Actually, John calls it rural Googlefication initiative to get internet everywhere. And of course, the easiest way to start is in schools, libraries, hospitals, places where people go. Kids can at least use it there. But I think the real problem here is that all of the internet service providers have focused, and naturally, this is a market economy, on where the most customers are, which is urban areas. And people who live in places, beautiful places, where the population is less dense, very often have no choices. Their internet, basically, they have no good high-speed internet. They get satellite, and that's it. So I'm thrilled to hear President-elect Obama embrace this. Let's see what he does. But I'm really pleased that he recognizes at least that it needs to be a priority. Also, I'm looking at a website, digitalfamilyreunion.net. I think this is a neat idea. It's coming up soon. You might want to, if you're in the L.A. Area, right? It's L.A. area. December 11th at the Skirball Cultural Center. Is that how you say it? Skirball. You can go, if you go to digitalfamilyreunion.net, you can find out more about it. From 5 to 10 p.m., that's on Sepulveda Boulevard in Los Angeles. $40 for members, $60 for non-members. You can buy tickets online at the site, digitalfamilyreunion.com. There'll be networking. There'll be a party. And Nolan Bushnell is going to get a Lifetime Achievement Award. Outstanding achievement. What's the promo code? Okay, we're going to give you a deal for non-members, DFR03. And how much does that save them? Saves you, get down to the member price. This is supported by the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences and others. I think this is a great idea. Women in Technology International. What is it? DFR03 is the coupon code. It'll save you 33% on the pricing. Sounds like a fun event. December 11th, if you're in the L.A. area. All of Hollywood will gather at the Digital Family Reunion. All of Hollywood. And you too. And if I could get down there, maybe I will. Maybe I will. I'd like to go down. That sounds like fun. Scott is in Boca Raton, Florida, where the IBM PC was created. Hello, Scott.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm awesome. You were down here one time with the Screensavers.
I remember it very well. Beautiful area.
Yeah, it is. The economy is hitting us pretty hard, but we're still beautiful.
Is IBM still a big part of the economy down there?
No, not really. It's we got a lot of other companies like Office Depot, and but no, they're diminished a little bit, but still home of the PC. You can't take that away from us.
That's where it was all. The IBM folks, who are, of course, up in New Rochelle, New York. Is it New Rochelle? Well, they're in New York. Decided if we're going to invent a PC, we better get them out of town.
Yeah.
They created a Skunkworks in Boca.
Yeah.
And that's where they created the personal computer.
Yeah, they're in Raleigh-Durham now.
Oh, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, not for Raleigh-Durham. It's great for them, but I'm sorry for Boca. You know what? Boca's always going to do well. It's such a beautiful part of the country. I think you'll always be a place people want to be.
It's 65 degrees today.
I'll rub it in.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do for you?
My question is about with the economy, Windows Media Center. I decided to build a PC connected to my HD TV and put a high definition antenna on the roof because I was sick of the satellite and cable TV,
right.
Paying $120 per month, and now I get it for free. Well,
I'll tell you, the new high def digital TV is the best deal in high def. It's free, and if you're close enough to a broadcast market, you're going to get a great looking high def TV free.
Yeah, there's no compression. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering what you think the future of TV is with all this free stuff that I'm able to get. Sooner or later, I think other people are going to be able to get it too.
Well, look, here's the thing, and I have to say that I'm somewhat of a persona non grata at some of the high-quality premium content creator companies, because I've been telling them for years, your competition is free downloads from, illegal free downloads. This is the competition. If you're trying to sell people video, you've got to find a strategy that makes what you do worth the money you're charging, because anybody, and more people are going to figure this out, can go online now and download it for free.
Yeah. And I use Hulu in combination with the local channel. I'm only not getting like Discovery, HBO, and ESPN, but my wife approves it, so we're going to keep it. Plus, we're saving $120 a month, so we're doing pretty good that way.
Yeah. I think, I watch kids now, and more the way they get their entertainment is Hulu, which was set up by NBC and Fox. I mocked it at the time. I thought, who's going to sit in front of a computer and watch TV? But apparently I was wrong. Everybody is. And more, there are devices that will attach that Hulu to your TV, so you don't even have to sit in front of a computer. I use Boxy, which is great. It's a Xbox Media Center kind of a port that allows me to watch Hulu on my big screen TV using my Apple TV. It works great.
Exactly. And the Apple TV is pretty popular these days, too. And I got one.
Well, and there are more and more devices going to come out like that. I don't know how well Apple TV is selling, but it's clearly the future. So that does put companies like HBO in a bind.
Yeah. And they've upgraded it recently, the Apple TV, and they've really refined it. So
it looks good.
A lot better than it used to.
It looks good. It's a real tough thing for HBO. And by the way, HBO is the company I was talking about. I talked to them a few years ago, and they never invited me back because I said, guys, you got to wake up. You got to smell the coffee. And they didn't want to hear it. But they, and they may still not want to hear it. But look, HBO produces very, very high quality content. It costs them $1 million an episode to do things like True Blood. They need to find a way to pay for that content.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is. You can't put it on Hulu with ads in the middle of it. I don't know what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to find a business model. And you're right. As long as consumers like you, Scott, say, I don't want to pay a monthly fee. I'm going to use broadcast. Now, everything you're watching right now pays for itself through ads.
Yes. And at the beginning of some of the shows, they give you the ability to either watch the 3-minute ad or have intermittent advertisement throughout.
Yeah. And Hulu's not bad. I mean, far fewer ads than broadcast is.
Yeah, and they also have the high definite. You can do the 480 instead of the regular standard, and it looks beautiful in my head.
And look what YouTube's responding now. That's what we just talked about. YouTube's offering high def content, and companies like NBC are now making deals with YouTube to put their video there as well. I think the future is absolutely watching television on the internet, either through internet connected televisions, devices like the Apple TV, or frankly, my kids.
They don't know the difference between a TV and a computer screen. It's all the same thing to them. It's just a screen.
It's a screen.
So this is where it's headed. I don't think every bit of content could be advertising supported. Everything I do is advertised. I don't charge for anything I do. It's all advertising supported because that's an easy, simple model. But I don't think everything can be. And frankly, I don't want to see True Blood or Six Feet Under or The Sopranos interrupted by a commercial. So we've got to, you know, I pay for HBO because I want to support the productions that they do. But I think that we need to find HBO needs to find a way to make this work for everybody. And maybe it's a paid website. Maybe it's micropayments, 25 cents when you watch it. I think we're seeing structures to do things like that coming. They've got to solve this because, frankly, my kids just get everything off the internet. And they don't know from 25 cents, $1 million an episode. They don't know from. So, you know, this is the future we're looking at. Yeah. Scott, you're the future. You're the cutting edge on this.
Maybe we can pay per episode. Who knows? I got one more.
I'd like to do that. I frankly think that's the best way to do it. It's what I do in iTunes. And, you know, by the way, if a show is available on iTunes, I buy it. HBO finally started putting stuff on iTunes. That's finally wising up.
Sopranos.
Because then I just buy what I want instead of, you know, I go a la carte.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So your question, because I got a minute left. I hate to use up all your time.
One more question about your Hawaiian shirts. You don't wear them anymore. What happened?
They're upstairs. I wear them more. I'm not on TV anymore.
Well, you look
good. But now, as you obviously know, I do broadcast 40 hours a week of internet TV at live.twit.tv. You're right. I better break out the Hawaiian shirts and the flame shoes.
Yeah.
Once you get off TV, you stop thinking about those things. Yeah, I'll wear them more often, Scott, just for you. You're welcome. You're welcome. I was in a Hawaiian shirt store in Capitola, California, surf capital of Northern California, over the Thanksgiving holiday with my son. He bought a great Hawaiian shirt with Santa Claus and a surfboard on it, and I thought, you know, these I got to get more of these. Love those Hawaiian shirts. It's a little chilly right now if we're wearing them. Maybe that's the other reason. Thanks for the call, Scott. More of your calls to come. One more segment to go before we wrap this up. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by ESET, makers of the great Nod 32 antivirus. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32 for a special deal and a free trial. Visit www.eset.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Just a few more minutes in the show. Thank you so much for being here today. Don't forget, I continue after the radio show ends, I keep going for hours. We do about 30 to 40 hours a week of live video, podcasts. There's an audio stream. You can find out all about it at twit.tv, TWIT.tv, or search for Twit on iTunes if you want to download the podcast. They're all free. Just go to the iTunes store, search for podcasts, TWIT. It stands for This Week in Tech. Or you can watch live as we record them and do a lot of other stuff. That's live.twit.tv. Our last caller, I was being a little facetious when I said, I can't imagine anybody watching TV on a computer screen. But in fact, I'm such a believer in that that's exactly what I do all week long. We stream live video thanks to a Stickam, which is a great site where you can do this for free. That's the mind blower of this. You go to Stickam's, STICKAM.com. And if you've got a camera and a laptop and then internet access, you can stream video. And we're doing a little fancier. We got fancy lights from light panels and we got fancy cameras, and I could switch using a TriCaster from camera to camera and so forth. But, you know, that's not really necessary. it's just a toy for me. It's just fun. But it's really amazing where we're going with this stuff. And so, yeah, in effect, I have a TV studio in my radio studio, and we're sending TV out at the same time as we send out radio. So I guess I do believe in people watching it on their computers. I guess I do. Carl on the line in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Carl. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I stopped in my girlfriend's place and worked on a couple of computers that she's got. She had a couple of HPs.
Yeah, 24 hours later, you're probably still working on them, aren't you?
Oh, man, it was 48 hours straight, I swear.
Oh, God.
It's ugly. I got the one going. It's a good backup for the other one. When you click on my computers, it shows up three or four extra drives that aren't there, and they're empty.
Huh.
And
are they on the network? Are they network drives, or they're attached drives?
No, they're in the they say
they're actual drives.
There. Yeah, they show up there.
What are the names? What are the names on these drives?
G, H,
okay.
And
they're
I.
just letters. There are no names attached. Just letters.
Nothing. There's nothing okay. in them.
So
there's
what those are partitions, empty partitions that for some reason were initialized.
Okay.
Sometimes manufacturers like Dell used to do this. They've kind of phased out. Compaq and HP, I think, still do it. They put a hidden partition on the drive. You're not supposed to see it. You might, though, if you go to the disk management software. Is that what you're using? You're looking at disk management?
Okay.
You might see those. You're not supposed to see them in Windows Explorer, but you could see them if you were using something more sophisticated. And those contain often the Windows install disks that sometimes are very small and merely contain an identifier so that when you reinstall, they'll know it's a Dell and it's okay to use. Yeah, they use it for various things, updaters. That's probably what those are. Who made them? Who made the computers?
It was an HP, but the
there you
thing
go.
Is like after I got back on the road, I'm a trucker. After I got back on the road, I fired up my Vista, and it had the same thing, which blew my mind.
Well,
I never noticed.
They're telling me in the chat room, and I should have thought of this. In Vista, card readers are if you have a card reader. It assigns a letter to them, even if there's nothing on it, and it's G, H, and I, and that's probably what it is.
Okay.
So there's nothing there. If you double click it, does it say insert a disk or insert a card?
Yes, it does. It says you have to do something.
Yeah, that's your card reader.
Be.
That's nothing. It's just a. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I have them too.
Yeah, yeah. It's a card reader. Dumb. What am I thinking? That's something I don't think XP did that. It's something I think that Vista started doing. And yeah, they just show up as letters as if there's something there. There isn't anything there. So if you're seeing it in Windows Explorer, I'm looking at mine. I've got C, D, E, F, J, I, K. But mine say Compact Flash, Smart Media, SD. Mine actually say something. That's why I'm surprised it's just a letter, but maybe that's just variable depending on the installation. Probably just a card reader. Nothing there. Nothing to see here. Move along. Lance, Los Angeles, I think you're going to be our last caller today. Hi, Lance.
Hi, how are you? This is a great opportunity to speak with you.
Ah, nice to talk to you.
I have a little puzzler here, and I almost was thinking you were very close to an answer here when you were speaking with Joe from Kansas City earlier about the videos on the YouTube.
Yeah,
I have a demonstration reel that is made on a Mac, using iWeb on a Mac, using QuickTime on a Mac, and when you go to my website on an iPhone, the video won't play, and the iPhone's made on a Mac, and also using H264 is
but iPhones don't play Flash. So is it a QuickTime video?
It's a QuickTime video.
Okay.
And it's every person that has an iPhone cannot, the website comes up and the graphics are there,
right.
But the video has a big circle with a line through it.
Yeah, that's just, that's because an iPhone doesn't do it.
Now, can you explain to me why all the products that I, the videos made with products that were all designed for Mac.
No explanation for you, but Apple and Steve Jobs in his infinite wisdom, and if you ask him, he will tell you, I am infinitely wise.
Yeah.
Decided that the iPhone does not play video embedded in a window. It will play back QuickTime video. It will play back MP3 audio. It just won't play it embedded. You have to put a link there. So what you could do if you were, I don't know if iWeb's smart enough to do this, but you could say if you're, you know, you could do it in JavaScript. If you're looking on an iPhone, display a link. If they click the link, I believe it then will play. But they can't see it embedded in the window. I'm sure there's some technical reason. I have no idea. I have no idea why they decided to do that. And you're right. It's made on a Mac. It should work on a Mac Apple product like the iPhone. But Apple has decided in the Safari that is embedded, that comes with the iPhone, not to play back video inside a page for whatever reason. You can click the link and then see it, but not in the page. Crazy, man, but that's why, Lance. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.